The deputy editor of the newsletter, Ben Laurie, joining us. Good morning to you, Ben.
Morning.
Steve. Morning. And Alison Morris from the Irish News. Good morning to you, Alison.
Good morning.
Is it conceivable, Ben, given what Sir Geoffrey Donaldson said last night, his total denial that he knew anything about this side deal, is it conceivable that the DUP would also be of that opinion and not release a statement this morning backing up Sir Geoffrey's position? Instead, the DUP, when asked if Arlene Foster knew about this, they have released a statement saying it's not surprising both sides will talk to the government. Is it conceivable that the DUP would release a statement like that if Arlene Foster didn't know as well?
Well, I think everything in this is conceivable. The first thing is you've got quite a complicated situation, which is that the main negotiators are based in Northern Ireland. And the most powerful people currently in the DUP, in one respect, are based in London. So anything is conceivable. But
is that a split? Is it a split in the power base of the party?
If you get away from a split, and I think that there are clearly tensions. They're very good at concealing tensions, but I think that there are clearly tensions within the DUP in all sorts of ways. There are some people who are keener to get back to Stormont than other people for various reasons. But even if you don't look at it like that, one of the things that I would say about this, which is very troubling from a unionist perspective, is that it is plausible from the British government point of view. That's what I would be most worried about. It is plausible that even if there hasn't been a deal, that there are assurances. For example, just a parallel thing that has worried me that was said recently by Simon Coveney. He's moved away from some of his quite hard-line rhetoric about we're not going to accept, he knows that things are very sensitive at the moment, we're not going to accept British-only direct rule. And then he said the other day, well, we don't want direct rule, the British don't want direct rule. And it wouldn't surprise me in the least if in conversations between the two that, you know, reassurance or assurances are given to Dublin saying, well, listen, don't worry, you know, we're going to do everything we can to avoid direct rule. And it wouldn't surprise me if reassurances are given in meetings between Sinn Féin and the British government along those lines that don't amount to a deal. I mean, but nothing in this is surprising to me. And it's all coming back from a unionist perspective. The most alarming thing to something that I said in this show the other day, I think that ultimately, over the longer term, with regard to their desire to get Stormont back, unionists are more vulnerable to this whole process because Sinn Féin don't really care about whether Stormont comes back. If they get big concessions, they'll agree to it. If they don't, they won't.
Alison?
I think that's sort of oversimplifying it a bit. I was in the studio last night when Gerry Kelly and Geoffrey Donaldson were having that spat, and it got quite heated and it got quite feisty for a while. And I think what has happened is clearly those legacy issues and the consultation. If we break that down in relation to what happened with that consultation, that's not a devolved issue. That's stuff that was agreed in Stormont House in 2014, and it was meant to go out to consultation last October. I did an interview with the Victims Commissioner, and she told me that James Brokenshire, the former Secretary of State, promised her that consultation would start last October. It was held back, and it was held back to be used as a negotiating tool, which I think is quite shameful, really, when you think about the subject matter. And also, the stuff about the statute of limitations was never meant to be in that consultation, because, as we know, that was 2014. That statute of limitations stuff has been raised by Conservative MPs probably in the last year or two. For Geoffrey Donaldson, he didn't know anything about it. I find very strange, because Marilyn McDonnell has spoke about it. I know that Barney Rowan has mentioned things about it. Other people have mentioned, and we know that those deals are going on, and we know that the Lord Chief Justice has continually called for that money to be released for the inquests. So clearly there was conversations going on between the British and Irish government, or between the British government and Sinn Féin. But what you do have to wonder going forward is, if those talks do resume and if we do get back around the table, who does Sinn Féin speak to? Because we've had great examples say there wasn't even a draft deal on the Irish language. We weren't even going anywhere near there. And then we've seen the draft deal. And then we have, you know,
Arlene Foster saying that the Irish Language Act was never even contemplated.
That it wasn't contemplated, and yet we've seen it in black and white, and Edwin Poots went, yes, I
have a bill
that document. Yep. And Geoffrey and Edwin Poots said, he quite proudly said that he had a role in writing up that document, so we know it was genuine and we know that the DUP were contemplating it. And so the conflicting stories coming out of the DUP, I mean, you can imagine if those talks were to start, who do you speak to? Because clearly the negotiators that were in the room with Sinn Féin negotiating that deal were not just not feeding that back down to their base and their supporters and their voters, but they even telling the rest of their party the detail of it. So then it begs the question is, were Sinn Féin speaking to the right people? Were the British government speaking to the right people? And does the negotiating team need to come from Westminster and come from that wing of the DUP, who are clearly the people who can say yay or nay to any deal that is negotiated?
So are you saying, just on that thought, Ben, are you saying that essentially it is the DUP MPs in Westminster who are running the party?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there are different, it's a big organisation, there are different tensions, different perspectives and so on. And it's quite hard when you've got negotiators in Belfast and people in London for everything at every point to be on the same page. But I actually fundamentally agree with Alison about the differences that there have been. I mean, the rhetoric on the Irish language has just been all over the place. And it's been all over the place for more than a year. And Arlene Foster got really emphatic in recent days, returned to being really emphatic in recent days about there's not going to be an Irish Language Act. Well, we've moved beyond that. What everybody was saying was, is it going to be in effect an Irish Language Act? So, and I think that the big issue in this and the big problem from a unionist perspective, looking at it over the year, is the sense that there has been of, I don't want to say a desperation to get Stormont back, but at some times it's looked like something approaching on the part of some elements of the DUP and the British government, a desperation to get Stormont back. And Alison mentioned there the legacy inquest. We could go back and forth. It's quite a complicated thing. I've been following legacy for years, and even I find it complicated. But one of the things that Gerry Kelly was saying there was, and I do wonder whether this is correct, and I'm very surprised if it's the case, that the British government had given assurance that the statute of limitations idea was going to be dropped.
Well, they didn't say it was going to be dropped. They said it was going to be dropped from the consultation. That's different. That all that is a public consultation. You know, that is not what the legislation is going to be at the end of it. It is just the aspect of their views before it then goes to Parliament. So I wouldn't say the fact that the statute of limitations has been taken into consultation means that it's off the table, because that's a completely different issue, and that's something that we know is being driven by a number of Conservative MPs who are probably whose constituencies are places where there would be army bases, and they would have a lot of sway in that area. So I wouldn't take that as meaning that the statute of limitations is gone. It certainly isn't.
Is there just
about then the legacy inquest? The other thing I think, by the way, it is the clear direction of travel has been that the DUP and British government are going to concede the legacy inquest. I've been very troubled about the legacy inquest. Some people on the unionist side are very troubled about legacy inquests for a long period of time.
Then I don't understand why. I don't understand why anyone from any community would be troubled by a legacy inquest. It's the coroner's court. It's giving people answers as to how their loved ones died. The Kingsmill families are currently going through a fresh inquest now. The coroner's court does not belong to one section of the community or another. This is literally about giving people answers, some of whom have died while waiting on them. No one has anything to fear from the inquest court. No one.
Overwhelming bulk of the legacy inquests are victims, people who died at the hands of the state.
There are
many people who died at the hands of the state in tragic circumstances, who haven't had a resolution, and clearly they need that resolution, and they need, at the very least, truth. But when we, and I think we were the only people to do this at the newsletter, examined the then 92 legacy inquests, more than a third of them, by some counts over 40 of the 92, were terrorists who died. And if we get into a situation, there was an ongoing court case about this, where it's potentially £1 million per inquest, that was one of the figures that was mooted, where these legacy inquests soak up tens of millions of pounds, is there going to be any money left at the end of the process to examine the thousands of people who died at the hands of the IRA? And that is why there is concern about legacy inquests.
The British government had given the money for legacy inquests separately, and Foster held it back in 2016. That money has nothing to do with historical investigations. Those people who have loved ones murdered by the IRA who are still waiting on investigation should, and I assume will still get those. The money for inquest is separate money. That was ring fenced for inquest and purely for inquest.
Can I, before you both go this morning, just ask a final question about the political, the overarching political situation in Northern Ireland. The tension between the DUP and Sinn Féin at the moment, Ben, and he said, she said, and them even disagreeing about what they had agreed or disagreed on. Is this normal par for the course politics in Northern Ireland, or are we detecting here a return to relationships being so bad that, that an agreement is very unlikely in the short term?
I hesitate maybe about using the word disastrous, but it's something approaching disastrous, the political situation in Northern Ireland. And it's all rooted in a small number of things. It's rooted in the fact that the British government, Brexit has thrown everything up into the air. The British government's consumed in it. The British government didn't get its majority back and is dependent on the DUP. And the Assembly election last year was a very bad election for unionism. And I have no idea how this is all going to pan out. And I don't see an easy resolution. And even if a deal like the mooted deal had gone through, I can't see how it will stick.
Yeah, I think that the problem is, if we look back at the 10 years of devolution that we did have with Martin McGuinness and Pierre Robinson, Martin McGuinness and Ian Paisley, you can see you don't have to agree with someone politically to be in government with them. And you don't even particularly have to like someone to be in government with them, but you do have to trust them. You do have to trust their word. And what we have seen with these negotiations is there's clearly no trust between these two parties. I don't even think there's a great deal of trust between certain members of the DUP and other members of their party, never mind between Sinn Féin. And I think that's a real problem. That's a serious problem. If you don't trust the person you're negotiating with, if you don't trust what they say and don't trust them to abide by that, then I think we're in serious difficulty.
And is it la-la land, Ben, that anyone would ask the British government to not do these side deals, that if they really mean it when they say publicly it's about parties sitting down and talking to each other and coming up with local decisions accountable to the local electorate? Is it again conceivable that the British government would give an undertaking not to do any side deals in any future agreement?
Well, I think it's very likely that such an assurance would be given, and I'm sure that would already be said. But it's not entirely feasible that that's the case, because as we all think, we hear of all these meetings, people going in and out of Downing Street and this, that, and they go on over months and years. They're not that common that they meet the Prime Minister, but still, what's being said behind closed doors? We just don't know.
But you say that...
Saying, worry about X or Y, it's not going to be a problem in the end.
You say, Ben, that you're pretty sure the British government would give that assurance. We have now had the NIO communicate with the Nolan Show twice this morning, in which they have not given any type of undertaking that a side deal has not been done here with either of these political parties. And they're refusing to address the point. So there's another elephant in the room. You've got Karen Bradley constantly talking about she doesn't want to make decisions, it's for the local parties to do that. And you've got the NIO just ducking the whole issue this morning as to whether they actually are doing side deals with each of the parties. Alison?
I think because we've seen that document, we've seen how close they were, I would assume that Karen Bradley's holding back on giving anything that was committed to because it's still on the table as negotiating chip. But what I would also say, if this doesn't work and these talks don't work and we're going to have another year or 2 years or even 5 years without devolution, if you remember the LGBT community or if you were a victim waiting on an inquest, would you really care how that legislation or how that money went through, whether it was through Westminster or any other route? I don't think that you would. So therefore, I mean, we could say side deals, which I don't think it does sound like as if something, you know, going on out of the side of someone's mouth. But if it comes to the point where we're going to have Westminster legislate for things that our local politicians can't, then I don't think the people here on the receiving end who have been waiting on that legislation will particularly care how they got it.
Just one final question, Ben. Strikes me this morning when I look at this DUP statement to the Nolan Show, it's not surprising both sides will talk to the government about progressing issues of interest to themselves during negotiations. Well, when you look at an issue like legacy, that's not an issue of interest to just Sinn Féin. That's an issue of interest to the whole community in Northern Ireland. So what were the British government doing any type of unilateral side deal with Sinn Féin about an overarching issue like legacy?
Well, it seems to me that everybody is saying that there might be assurances given, that they're conceding that there might be assurances rather than actual side deals. But nothing in this surprises me. I mean, particularly when it comes to the British government, I think the British government has been weak all the way through. I think it's been weak about legacy. I think the statute of limitations is a desperate way to just keep the process going and make sure soldiers don't get prosecuted.
But where's
I think it's been weak about direct rule. I think it's been weak about everything.
But where's the DUP's leverage?
That's one of the really alarming things from a unionist point of view.
But the DUP's propping up the British government, Ben. Where's their leverage?
It is astonishing and alarming that when the DUP is propping up the British government, it's these kind of things are happening. And nothing more perfectly illustrates that than what happened in December. They almost pushed through something that was very bad from a unionist point of view on potential border in the Irish Sea. And then even the revised wording gave greater assurances to Dublin and greater assurances to Dublin to nationalists than it did to unionists. And that's what happens when we have a unionist conservative government propped up by the DUP. What could happen if it was a Jeremy Corbyn government operating on its own?
OK. Ben Laurie, Alison Morris, thank you.